Happy Sunday, everybody, and thank you for coming to share and receive and also offer blessings to one another. Your very presence is a blessing. The fact that we join together creates a community in which our blessings resonate and they echo into the halls of eternity and travel indelibly into the heart of Christ. As he said, whenever two or more of you are joined in my name, I am there. And he is here. He's going to join us in our study message today, which is becoming a community favorite. I'm so glad that I made those little switches and opened a communication line by email and a time to study together, because it gets us in the right state of mind for receiving, believing, surrendering, and accepting. So when we're in that place of conjoined hearts, we are just so much more powerful in the blessings of God. So welcome, everyone. And I hope you'll share with your friends and help them to feel comfortable coming too. We cover passages from the book, and we go over wisdom that was shared with me by our Son of God, sacred presence among us, and the blessings of God directly. We hope that this will enlighten your life and lighten your load, whichever you need the most. Nancy, would you like to say a couple of words before we get started?
I think that was just really lifting me right there about just lightening our hearts. That's what happens on Sunday, and it really prepares us for the rest of the week, and I hear that from people in our community, and so just really grateful to be here on this beautiful, sunny, hot day, but, you know, I'm inside a nice AC unit house, so that's all good. Just so delighted to be here. Thank you, Glenda, for being here every week for us and for the teachings. I know we're all just really, you know, bringing them together and building on the blessed life and now moving into the path of success. So thank you. Just happy to be here. Today's Gary's 77th birthday, and he's doing great, nice and healthy. So I'll offer him as part of the blessing today and in gratitude for his love and light. I got to tell you, folks, if you've never met him, you can probably just tell just by him being in the circle. He's just a beautiful soul that's just really quiet and calm, and he's really in tune with nature, and he's been a wonderful partner. Our anniversary is tomorrow, 41 years. So I will say we're having a wonderful weekend, and the blessing call is you know, the cream and the icing on the cake for us. So thank you. You know, and I think about something you said once about age and how, you know, we don't think in terms of numbers, and it's a kind of a trap for people. And he's sort of the living, you know, demonstration of that. He looks forward to the next day, and I don't know, it's 41 years seems to have gone pretty quickly. So,
but you can count the kids and grandkids that mark the time.
But yeah, so everyone, it's just every day is that gift, and so we're just living in the moment and being in gratitude. So welcome,
that's
everybody.
Great.
We've got a lot of us here today, so that's exciting. And I know your message is going to be something we really need to hear. And so then we'll get some callers towards the end, and we could chat about what we learn and questions we might have, and maybe request a blessing. So yeah, just so happy
absolutely
to be here.
I'll turn it back to everybody when my time has been completed. So, back to this thing about time and numbers. We do live in a quantifiable material universe. Everything in the material universe has an expectation time to it. It has a duration. It has a progression number, shall we say, first stage, middle stage, layers, and so on. And that's true even of neutrinos, the tiniest particles in existence. Well, not the tiniest, but the tiniest that are known about. We do have this progression of time, but there's the other side of the universe, which is timeless. And this has actually been acknowledged and explored. We don't yet know how to implement it in all the ways we would like to. I think that comes at the time of greater human enlightenment, that we will have that revelation. And it probably will have something to do with the coming of heaven to earth. But there are these two sides of existence. And in the quantum side of existence, there is no space. There is no time. And it accounts for how Yeshua could be totally and completely with each one of you without excluding another. Mm-hmm. It totally explains how you existed before your birth and will continue to exist forever after your passing from the material side of existence. There is really no such thing as death. There's just closing the door on your material pathway. So you cross the threshold and you're into the infinite world. What we hope for and what we pray for when we talk about heaven on earth is having a united mixture of these two sides. Yeshua in his resurrection demonstrated to us that it is possible. As he rose from the dead, he was at first a completely spiritual being, which is literally recorded and testified to in his meeting with Mary Magdalene in cemetery garden, where she wanted to touch him. And he said, "No, I am not yet of this world." But by the time he had reunited with the apostles, we have the famous or infamous event of Thomas wanting proof that he was really back in form. He wanted to touch him. Thomas had that role. You know, we shouldn't really derogate that, because who wouldn't want to? Well, I can't say that for myself, because I sure didn't want to. I was afraid I would disappear. But Thomas, of course, was an apostle, a buddy, someone who traveled with him, had dinner with him, slept in a circle with him. So, yeah, he wanted to see if he was really, really back. He touched him, and he went, "Wow, hey, you are here." Then he later joined other of the group for dinner and ate like a normal person. So he walked upon the earth for another 40 days, taught, loved, healed, and gave the most eloquent and transcendental messages of his mission on earth. And then they watched him ascend into heaven. So where he has watchfully been with us ever since. Periodically, and according to recorded records, he has actually appeared to many people through the centuries. Possibly a million people. I am not alone, and I wasn't singled out as a special person. But the people he did appear to clearly needed a message. He appeared to St. Francis, for example. And he appeared to Paul. And that was the launching point of Paul's ministry is when Yeshua appeared to him. So, and he appeared occasionally to the apostles as they did their work, and then to others that came into doing the work. So the fact that he can appear is not at all out of line that he ascended, because he retained his inhabitants of both spheres of existence. That's what he accomplished with the resurrection. And it will be no stunning feat for him that he reappears to everyone, which is part of what the book of Revelations is talking about. It's kind of, and that is so misunderstood. I was criticized for many in the beginning. That hasn't happened recently, but in the beginning, I was deeply criticized for claiming that he has appeared to me, and he's not supposed to show up until he appears for everybody. So I am a blasphemer. Well, that all I had to do is show them the records of how many he appeared to, and they went, oh, okay. And I said, what's different is the time will come when everyone can see him. That's what's different about the second coming, which is his new birth into the realm of humanity and the earth for the purposes of creating heaven on earth. And it will more than likely involve some struggle or chaos preceding those times, because those who are ready to receive him in mass will be gathering together, and this will cause a kind of resentment, shall we say. That's the lighter objection, resentment, and so forth, from people who think that their worldly power is the extent of power and do not want to give credit to a higher power. So in my opinion, we're in those days right now. How long they will last, how long it will take, who knows? Who knows? Yeshua was asked many times by his apostles, well, Lord, when is this going to happen? And he'd say, I don't know. Not even the Father knows. Now, why could the Father not know such a thing? Well, the only reason is that it's the consummate union of us. We have to come together to form that en masse entourage that is ready to be united in anticipation, in readiness, in eagerness to create and perform according to the will of God to finish this final stage of creation. So we're coming together, and I can't tell you how important it is that we are. And if there are other churches you want to belong to, join, go there. Other spiritual groups you want to belong to, go there, be there. This, what we offer, is not an exclusive relationship. It's an embracing relationship, extending and beginning with the time that I actually had communion with Christ. And not just communion at the altar, but visible communion that allowed me to paint the painting. Oh, and by the way, there is new release of documents that I already had in my possession, but I didn't dare. Well, I did dare to share them in the beginning, and again, I was told I was a blasphemer. So there were witnesses to the life of Yeshua that described his physical appearance, and one of them was sent to the Emperor Tiberius, and it's virtually identical to the painting that I was granted the privilege of painting. Another was written by the historian Josephus, who meticulously recorded all the events of Judea in his lifetime. And he witnessed and listened to the sermons of Christ. He described him, and again, it's almost identical to the way I was shown to paint him. And people say, well, why isn't he dark? The Jews are supposed to be dark. And my reply to that is, read the book of Genesis. For all the salvaged people of humanity disembarked from the ark, and every race of man went in to create the land of Judea, and they ranged from fair to black. All races of men unloaded from the ark, and they all created the land of Judea, and the fairest of the fair in the Bible was the tribe of Judah. The tribe of Judah was the tribe of kings, which went through the ages and included King David, Solomon, and all the kings that led forward to Yeshua's life. And Mary was born into the tribe of David, which is very important as opposed to Joseph, because Mary was the bearer of human DNA in this mixture of holy incarnation. The second half was the Holy Spirit, and so Mary was the human bearer of DNA, and she brought that in from the tribe of Judah. So would that mean being blonde? I doubt it by then, because living tribes together for thousands of years, they probably intermixed. They probably did. And the black would probably not be as black as Africa, but dark, very dark. The white would be light, but not like Norwegians. According to these documents that we have, more than likely, Yeshua had blue-green, gray eyes and copper-brown hair. They both mention copper-brown. So we're in very good company. No, actually, one of them, I think it was Josephus, said the color of ripe chestnuts, which would have been a warm, medium brown. So do we have an accurate portrayal of him? Well, I'm not going to say that 100%, because warped into the whole mixture would have been my capacity for perception. But I can say no one was more surprised than I that he looked like he did. It was not what I was pre-programmed to expect. I had grown up in the Protestant church, where his portrayers were all over the church as kind of a darker-skinned Caucasian, brown hair, brown eyes, in Sunday school books, and so forth, on the popular pictures that I'm sure you've all seen. And that's what I was expecting. And when he appeared the way he did, I went, what? I had to blink. I had to study it for 3 days before I was even willing to admit that it had come. Okay. Well, having said that, I think we're up with the news. I just wanted to share some really good news with you, and I think it pertains really nicely with the fact that we are probably in the age of revelations. Many things are going to be revealed that have been, if not suppressed, at least sequestered, because they were not believed to be wisely handled by uneducated people. and by uneducated. Well, until about the 18th century, most people were illiterate. And until we had a translation of the Bible into common languages, they had no Bibles either. They couldn't read Latin. Even if they could read anything else, it didn't include Latin. So the mysteries of the ancients, the prophets, the seers, the apostles, were somewhat hidden, if not completely hidden. One of the things that I do want to briefly discuss, because I think it's relevant for the times in which we live, and I've had a lot of requests from people to voice my opinion about what's going on in our country and what I would choose when it's time for me to make a choice. Well, I'm not going there. Firstly, because it's not my right or duty to tell you how to think about ordinary affairs in the world, secular affairs. We are here to share righteous time together where ideally there should be no conflict. We just look for the best in one another. We follow the best that's opening up for us in the world. But I do want to share something with you in terms of historical relevance, historical advancement toward where we are today. In the ancient world, during the Middle Ages, we had no choice but to follow the dictates of the educated and the aristocrats and the rulers. They owned the world, and they told us what to think. But by the 13th century, rumbling began to happen. And that rumbling was coming about because after the Crusades, we had the goods and the ability for ordinary people to start businesses and trade and develop their own banking system, loaning to one another, supporting one another with capital. Now, this was not the kind of capitalism we have today, but, I mean, let's face it. It helps to have a savings account if you want to start a business. Okay. And I think most of us would agree with that. But the rumblings were beginning of the middle class. And that middle class wanted to read the Bible. So there was a lot of demand to get the Bible translated into many languages. The coming of the Bible into the hands of average people and the rise of the middle class changed everything, literally everything. That is what caused the Reformation. And that Reformation really was overdue because even though during many times in the history of Christianity, the governance was righteous and eloquent, By the time the Reformation came about, we had the Inquisition and some very brutal, bitter times of prejudice and punishment. So that Reformation was way overdue. And the establishment of it as a result gave lots more strength to the middle class. Now, the rise of the middle class is almost entirely accountable for the rise of democracy. Democracy and the middle class are almost two sides of the same coin. Going further back in history, there was a time when Greece was the most beautiful democracy in ancient history. Well, it lost the democracy with the rise of aristocracy. Now, the aristocracy in Greece was more like banking and business. It was material aristocracy, not kingship. Now, the same thing happened in the development of Rome. There was a time when Rome was a republic, And that was the time when there was a very, very healthy, vital middle class. As the wars grew and the need for military establishment grew, well, the middle class was consigned to be soldiers and the women consigned to be servants. The middle class disappeared. So did democracy. Okay? As democracy rose in the history of Europe, we began to have emerging democracies in all of the countries. Even in England, that is so staunchly entrained into its monarchy, it was persuaded to have the House of Commons and the House of Lords. In other words, the people wanted a vote. They demanded to have a vote. And as we make decisions in the coming years in this country, I want you to have respect. I call you to have respect for your forebears, your parents, your grandparents, your ancestors further back than that, who created this as a nation for the people and by the people. Okay? They created a very healthy, democratic union that was not controlled by elite powers. The media was given a mediating power that was supposed to be neutral, not inflammatory, not proclaiming, not propagandistic, but simply a neutral reporting agency, kind of like an umpire who kept both sides fair. That's it. That's all that we're supposed to do. Now we have a nation with a great emerging aristocracy. And that's the only thing I would ask you to be mindful of, because it's you that keep this country safe. I dare say everybody on this call is middle class in one or more different financial brackets, because it includes many financial brackets, but what's common to the middle class is it's about the people. It's about the people. It's about you. It's about your family, your neighbors, your community, and then lastly, about your nation. You want to create something that will outlive your life, that when Yeshua comes, he's got a ready audience, and people can gather according to their beliefs and be spiritually open, where spirituality is welcomed and the gathering of people in a spiritual state is welcomed. So I would say vote on yourself. First of all, vote on yourself. What is right for you? Vote on your family. Vote on your community. Vote on the larger community of humanity. And take it all the way, because you're going to have to live it. Whatever happens, you're going to have to live. And we do not want. Now, when I talk, let me say this, because I want to keep it fair like an umpire. When I say democracy, I'm not talking about the Democratic Party, which is today probably the least democratic of all. I'm talking about the spirit of true democracy, which is where the will of the people is respected, and people are part of the vote. People are here to have a say in their life and their future. Now, that's going to be my transition right now to the next stage of Chapter 14, In Love Without End. After we have gone through, if we went through studying the three major stages of success. Okay? First of all, be the love that you are. And being the love that you are, when you are, as you are, if you are, And that if is a big one, because we often confuse our actions of love with the spirit of love. The spirit of love reviews the outcome of what you're doing. You're not going to spoil the kids with toys just because you can't be there with them. Those are actions of love. You're going to do what it takes to make those kids feel important, because they are. They're our future. Okay, going on. Be the love that you are. Then do the right thing. It's going to be easy to do the right thing when you're the love that you are. And we went through that last time. Now, follow life and the living. This brings me up to completing or putting the cherry on top of this historical review I've given you, how we came to where we are. Because people who were just being people made differences in the world by just following their life, supporting the life of their children. They were no longer following only, sometimes they had to a little bit, but not only the dictates of royalty, not only the dictates of, aristocracy or manipulation from those who just wanted to be in control. How do you tell the difference between a truly accomplished person and a ruling aristocrat? For a ruling aristocrat, all they want is control. That's it. You give them control and they're happy. And that would be fine if they could follow the first two tenets of Pathways to Success, if they could be the love they are, do the right thing, and then follow life in the living. So life in the living, we take that for granted because we're in the middle of it. How could we follow anything but the life in the living? Well, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised how out of date we can be, just really through largely misunderstanding and through insecurity, great insecurity about making changes that are needed, about doing the things that are needed to bring about a better way of living, right adjustments, doing the right thing, can actually generate a lot of anxiety in people. It can get them very harnessed into conformity. It's just easier. Let's just conform. This will be easier. It takes a lot of courage to step outside of conformity. It really does. And following life in the living is actually easy if you will take the time every day to be in touch with it. Do something that is unquestionably living. Whether it's take a walk, hold a pet, love a child, go to the farmer's market, whatever opportunities are available to you, connect with life every single day. And know that life is a gift of God. It's going to ask you point blank, can you give life? No. You can put seeds in the ground. You can water them. You can make sure they have sunlight. But you're not the one that gives life. Some of those seeds will sprout. Others won't. Some will sprout and grow an inch or two and then just wilt and shrink up. Others will become vital and productive and bear fruit or flowers. Who is the giver of life? Well, you see, it's really, really hard to be an atheist and believe in life, because atheist cannot create life. They like to create surrogates and, replicas, impersonations, duplicates, synthetic alternatives to life. And I assure you, they're on the verge of creating a big one. It's called AI. AI will bring many advantages to the world. We're not sure yet whether they will be blessings, but they will be advantages because AI can calculate intelligence far more than the most brilliant human ever could. But will their calculations be relevant to humanity? That's what we don't know. And we're going to pay a big price for finding out. If we find out and move in that direction too soon, inevitably it will come. But wouldn't it be nice to come under heavenly supervision? Let's don't hasten into what we don't understand. Even if it gives all the facts correctly, it can adjust the priorities. It can adjust what it thinks is the most important for people to know. This is the ultimate response we should be thinking in relation to the media today. Even if everything it reports is factually accurate, which is not likely to be true, but let's just give it the benefit of the doubt and say it's true. There's no question that it's spinning it in the direction it wants to go. It's favoring what it wants to impart, and it's disfavoring what it wants to have ignored. AI will be brilliant at doing that. Brilliant. And it will be influenced by those who control it. So it's something to pray about, something to think about in your own heart and mind. And let's keep our mind, our life, in touch with what is real. Because God and reality are one. And this is where we have an advantage over AI, is the sense of relevance and reality. We have the advantage in that regard. Being in touch with life and the living will give us a truth you can't find in books. It's a truth that is bigger than all the books and all the libraries in existence. Stay in touch with life and the living. And I'm going to take up another semi-controversial subject, which I have tended to avoid, but I'm feeling a little bit brave today. And that has to do with ecological fears. Fears about our climate and the damage that it's causing to the earth. There's no question that changes in the climate are affecting, or I should say changes in the atmosphere and the stratosphere and the deep earth are producing climate changes. The only thing that I feel is not being accurately reported, because I've checked it out extensively, and I've asked for confirmation from Yeshua, and that is only a small percentage of these changes are human caused. Most of them have cyclically happened in the earth because it's part of the changes. The natural changes the earth goes through on a cycle. And they were not actually caused by human interference. The ones that were caused by human interference could probably be corrected fairly easily within a generation. Nothing to be extremely alarmed about. Now, the fact is we are going through a period in time where the Earth is having its bodily cycle, okay? It's going to be birthing and having labor pains. It's going to be challenged with its pains and its need to liberate these pains with adjustments in the crust. We're looking in a very alarming kind of way to the Mid-Atlantic Rift, because it goes through a turning of ocean waters about every 25,000 years. And right now, it's within 200 years of being ready to do it again. Could be as early as 2050. And so it definitely pays to study these things. But here's what I don't like, and here's what Yeshua does not like, is that these changes are being blamed on humanity, as if we are a creation to be hated, to be stopped, to be intensely controlled, and possibly annihilated. There are people on this earth that hate humanity. There just are. They've always been here, but no one had the power to hate the whole lot of us. Okay? It was usually targeted toward a particular segment of society, or a race, or a gender, or something of the sort. But there are now, because we can see the whole of humanity, and the whole of humanity can be targeted, these hateful people are now in a very, very threatening position to hate us all. And they may try. It serves to be mindful, to be careful in your prayers, to be careful of any hate that might dwell up in you, because we do not want to give power to hate anywhere, nowhere. When we close the door on hate, these people who are hateful, or these conglomerates that are hateful, or the corporations, or the national interests, whatever it might be. And there are different levels of magnitude, but there are some hateful entities that should not escalate into power. Do not give power to hate groups. It doesn't matter what you think about what they're hating. The fact that they're hating makes them the wrong group. Whoever is hating is the wrong group. Whatever person is hating is in the wrong position. Don't give power to hate. What we have to do more than anything else right now is love ourselves. Love our neighbor as ourselves, our fellow human being as ourselves. Other groups of humanity, love them. Even if you think of them as your enemy right now, they're part of your DNA. They were co-created with you. Love them. Because as a lover of humanity, you're the one who is right. You're the one who is doing the right thing. You're the one who is love. So, you promote yourself as well as the good of all of us coming together. And I can tell you, out of my experience as a minister, even hateful people who experience love begin to change in a positive direction. Most hateful people have never known real love. They've seen the fake love. They've seen the surrogate love, which was only designed to manipulate. They came to hate that manipulation, and good choice that they did. But then they think that their manipulation is the answer from hate. Bad choice. Okay. We've got to show real love. Real love. Show up in the world as the love that you are. Do the right thing. And connect with the basic fundamental righteousness of life. Don't be afraid of nature. Don't be afraid of the earth. We will survive anything the earth puts in our pathway. Now, the dangers of hateful people, that's another proposition. We don't know. But let's just reduce the number of them. Let's reduce their number. And by this, I'm not saying that we take out hardened psychopathic criminals, put them on the street. I'm just saying we establish therapy that is rooted in love. Let's establish teaching that is rooted in love. Let's establish education for our young people that is rooted in love. Let's get rid of all the indoctrination that has an underscore of right to be resentful, right to hate, right to be in disallowance of others. Get rid of it. Let's be in a state of loving allowance, love that overcomes, and love that sees the embedded rightness in all of life. Because as we follow life in the living, we will know what is right. Only God creates life. So if it's life in the living, there's at least some part of it that's right. You may wonder, well, what's the right thing to do? Well, follow life in the living. There'll be some part of it that's right because only God can create life. And that includes even the evolution of culture, the evolution of knowledge, the evolution of technology. If it's, you know, if it's right, it's of God. If it's living, it's of God. So ask, does, if you're wondering about what to do, is does it serve life? Does this serve life? Will it serve my life? Will it serve the life of my grandkids? And there's your answer. There's your answer. And then next week, we're going to progress to the fourth stage of success. We've got to disconnect from everything that's wrong and that we did wrong. So we're going to really look at the real nature of forgiveness, what it is, and how did Yeshua save all of humanity when he forgave us on the cross. How did that work? Because we could say, I forgive all of humanity, and it probably wouldn't. It might work a little bit in that it might motivate us to do the right thing. It might put us in the right attitude. And so everything goes better for those we love. Yes, it will make a difference, a big difference. But how can you save all of humanity with forgiveness? We're going to look at that next time. So stay tuned. Well, Nancy, let's take some calls.
Let's do it. We've got some callers today. I'm going to open up the first line, and that is Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Aloha, Nancy and Glenda and beloved community. I am so grateful to be here. I have so much joy in my heart. I'm walking on the earth with my bare feet. So the first prayer I want to ask, these little tiny orange chameleons, just a prayer for them and for all of God's creation. May we walk softly and love all of God's creation. And then I want to ask for a blessing for my my uncle, David Coulter, and my aunt, Deb. And then my best friend, Julia, and her husband, Patrick, and his mom, Aline. I got a whole list.
And finally, you're here.
People are finally blessed to know you.
Yes. Thank you. I feel so blessed to know all of you and to love all of you. And so finally, a prayer for myself, for my own purification process, and also a special blessing. I've been taking singing lessons for the past year and a half, and it is truly my entire intention is to sing to God, to sing in church with my brothers and sisters, and I ask Yeshua for a special blessing for that.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful, Sarah. And I know that everyone that listens to you will be blessed.
Oh,
it's going to come from
you.
Your heart. It's going to
That's
come
right.
through you, from your heart through your voice.
That's right. Yes. Thank you so much. I love you all so much.
We love you too. And I wish you a wonderful blessing today.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Sarah. Thank you for calling and being with us today. I'm going to open our next caller, Glenda, and is it Danny? Or is it Daniel? You might have to unmute yourself. It's a 541 area code.
Hi, my name is Joseph.
Joseph, welcome.
Hi. Yes, not so much a question, but more of a proclamation and a shift in my life. I was ordained into Spiritus ministry in 2012. I've been working as a clinician at a mental health agency for the past 10 years, and I have come to the realization that I still feel as though I fall short of my goals and my personal ability to be love and live love throughout the day. And I just want to take the next step and live more in love and less in judgment and feel more confident in my ability to do that. With Yeshua's assistance and all of my angels and guides that follow me and help me along the way.
Oh, that's a great request, Joseph. And it's one we all could be benefited by. You know, learning to be the love that we are is a hard one in this world. And especially when you're serving people with hardship in life. It's very difficult. I have a friend who is working on becoming a minister, been working on it for several years, and he's working in a clinic for people with advanced dementia, and he takes care of them in the night shift, and sometimes he comes away with cuts on his arms because they are quite aggressive, and his job, his goal is to be able to handle this with love. I think he's doing a great job, but you know, I don't think any of us human beings are going to be perfect in a job like that. There will be times when we're challenged about, well, what should I have done? How could I have done this better? How could I have really made a change in this person's life? But the fact that you asked the question, Joseph, shows me where your heart is.
Thank you, Glenn. I really appreciate that affirmation.
To be vulnerable and transparent and to share what's difficult is, you know, you're just speaking for a lot of us, and I think I really appreciate that, Joseph.
Well, it's called compassion. And compassion is really the answer all of us should be looking for, because we have been told a lot of wrong things about love. We just have. We've been propagandized on expressions of love, shall we say, because they are so marketable. They can be turned into chocolate candy. They can be turned into perfume. They can be turned into honeymoon vacations. Yeah, they can be marketed. All of these expressions of love. And, of course, a classic example is Valentine's Day. And this is not what love is. True love is the compassion you feel when you actually join with another person and connect with their life. This is what Yeshua's language did not really have an equivalent to the word compassion. It didn't. So he used the only expression that was available to his apostles to describe compassion when he gave into the apostles to love others as yourself. That's exactly what compassion is. It means love with, love as one, love in union. And when you, that's what it means. It doesn't mean putting up with nonsense or allowing someone to hurt you just because you don't want to instruct them in proper behavior. That's, you know, people who go around hurting others are probably hurting themselves. And the real correction on them is not so much judgment as it is understanding. I have actually brought someone to tears by asking them, what is, you must be hurting terribly to do what you just did. I'm so, so sorry for your pain. They fell into tears, and they said no one ever noticed that before. This is what Yeshua was talking about when he said to love others as yourself, to be in a state of union with them. He was not talking about Valentine's Day. Oh, that's a nice occasion. I mean, who doesn't like getting a Valentine's from a friend, really? But it's the Disneyland version of love. Real love takes courage, a lot of courage.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your response and your assistance in this.
Thank you for being with us today.
What's your last name? I remember your voice very well. What's your name?
Joseph LaMartina.
I thought so. That's the name that was coming to my mind, but I just wanted to confirm it. Yes, I remember you very well. It's been years. It's been a lot of years, though. Okay, well.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for the good work you do.
And thank you for your never-ending support. Much appreciated.
You're so welcome. That's my pleasure.
Well, thank you so much.
And I do know what you go through. I do know.
You sure do. Okay, we are going to take another caller. We have a few more, Glenda. I believe Stormy, is this you, Stormy?
Yes, I'm here. A funny antidote. I understand the problem of all my health concerns. And it's what people have said of me all of my life is, I'm really not quite here yet. I haven't fully manifested myself. So, Jesus, I'm a little older than you are. Yeah, that could be a problem. But another beautiful story quickly on the Internet. It's a story about how an eagle befriended a kitten that was lost, and the people in the town, a particular lady, fed the cat. And she was watching this eagle come and befriend this kitten, which is not what eagles do.
Oh, no. No, they have them for dinner.
And very shortly thereafter, and she told the town about it, and the town came to see, small town. But very quickly, the eagle flew away with the cat. Well, you think the worst. And the lady tells the people in the town, we need to go find that eagle. And she goes to the local park ranger, and he goes to the three places where eagles nest, and the third place they found the kitten with its mother.
Oh, my goodness.
The eagle picked up the cat. I'm sorry, I still want to tear. There is
some communication. They were really able to communicate, weren't they?
Yeah.
Aww.
You know, the eagle befriended and saw. Yeah.
That is love.
The animals
actually,
are trying to tell
actually,
us something.
You know, it's everything we were talking about today. It's love, it's doing the right thing, and it's life in the living. It's a beautiful example, Stormy.
I told my housekeeper this story, and a couple of days later she comes back and says, I told that story to a friend of mine who has a pit bull here in Emory, nearby where I live, and says, that dog has always killed cats. Well, yesterday, the pit bull has befriended a cat.
Oh, my goodness. That is great.
Something is happening. The animals are trying to tell us something, aren't they?
Yes, they are. I second that.
There's something happening in the world here. That is just beautiful, Glenda. Absolutely beautiful.
It sure is. Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Stormy.
And I'll try and work on getting myself here more.
Don't bother. We like you right where you are.
Okay, I'm doing okay the way I am here in between worlds. One foot in the other and one here. That's okay by me.
That's okay. That is fine with me. You take care of yourself, Stormy. Bye-bye for now.
Yes.
Bye-bye. Bless you, Stormy. Bless you. We have Stephen. Your line is open.
Oh, hello, everyone. Glenda, thanks so much for this great teaching. I just wanted to add a couple things. One was I remember, I don't know if it was you or maybe Yeshua in Love Without Ender, Kesey Yeshua, saying that hatred actually maybe somewhat comes from just even a fear, like a fear of love itself. Is that true? Is that your recollection?
I don't remember it from the conversation, but it's certainly relevant because love is so important to our existence. If we have ever been falsely loved, it's cause for fear. If those who brought us into this world only manipulated us, it will make us very frightened of fear. People can become very frightened for making close, intimate connections, for trust. And there's nothing worse than the abuse of love. There's nothing worse than that. So it is a cause for fear.
I see. Okay. So in a lot of times, like if somebody's deeply hating someone or something, it's almost like they have a fear of opening up to the love around it or something like that.
Well,
almost.
That could be it. Or it could be that they are atheistic. I mean, systemically atheistic, meaning they grew up in an atheistic family, they're in an atheistic profession, their values that have shaped their life and all the actions of their life are indigenously atheistic. And so there's no ground for love. There's no place where love could fit in.
Okay.
For them, love would be fake. They might send somebody flowers, but it's not real as a gesture of love.
Got it. Yeah, it's more of a reaction or a socially
courteous thing to do, you know, but having absolutely nothing to do with love.
Okay. And then I just want to say that I really love that connection you just made of, you know, love your neighbor as yourself with compassion. I've never really put those two together. And I feel that that's just so, it's just another way of looking at it. It's so profound, but it's so true at the same time. And I was curious to see it. I checked the internet real fast and I was curious about the Aramaic and it, it came up with, on a quick search, it said the Aramaic word for compassion is rachma. And it says the term is related to the Hebrew word rachamim, which also means compassion or mercy. The root of the word suggests a deep, tender love, often connected to the love of a mother that a mother has for her child. So, yeah, it's. I think that is the core of the whole thing. It's that. Yeah. It's almost like what do I want to say? It's like that. It's like the infinity sign, right? It's like when you're really in that true state of really loving yourself, you know, compassionately and loving another compassionately. It's like you're just really connected, like that infinity sign, right? You're just going, you know, it's a circling back always of the energies. And that's like the holiest point to be in, you know. It's like when you're in that point, it's like there's nothing more like holy than that, it seems.
No, that's it. Well, the thing is, Yeshua was just improving upon the words that were available. The closest words to compassion in Aramaic more referred to sympathy and mercy. Like, okay, I understand, you know, I really do. I understand. I forgive you. Let's get along. Let's do life together. You know, it was more like sympathy and mercy. But he refined on that with the apostles, saying, I mean, actually love another as yourself. That was his way of taking the common expression, which was more like sympathy and, you know, I know you were starving. You didn't mean to take something that didn't belong to you. Here, I'll give you my bread. You know, sympathy and mercy was a common orientation in the Jewish explanation of God and life at that time. But compassion was a step further. That's where you actually love another as yourself.
Yeah.
Because it embraces union.
Yeah.
Sometimes we are limited by our vocabulary.
Yeah. It's like immediately he kind of, because like you said, those other words are kind of, they had probably been sort of overused at that point, or maybe watered down, or just become like a mental concept. And he was immediately taking it into the heart, right? He was like taking that whole thing and saying, well, he was elaborating, right? And he was like taking the whole concept right into the heart and saying, okay, no, this is, yes, we're not talking about, you know, we're talking about a true giving, you know, and a true deep feeling, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's not just actions or expression.
Yeah.
Sympathy can be just an expression or just an action. Compassion is a deep state of caring.
Yeah. No, I definitely
remember,
feel that.
Remember in Love Without End, he said, compassion is the soul's true knowing. I've always loved that. It's always been just like, wow, it just goes right to your soul and right to the heart of the matter.
And I'll tell you, that eagle really displayed an act of compassion there, huh?
Exactly.
That was amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll have to look that story up. Anyway, I don't want to take any more time. I just do want
Thank
to ask
you.
For a blessing for my continued healing around my back, and just a blessing for my wife, Samantha, and... Yeah, that's it. But thanks again, and that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.
Blessings always.
Love
so
it when you call. And we love when you share your revelations and the things you're learning, because we're all coming together on this. So thank you so much. I'm going to open our last caller, Glenda. We have Ken here today. Hi.
Hello, Nancy. Ken. Hello, Glenda. It's fantastic to be here again this week. And Glenda, first off, I just really want to thank you for your message today. It kind of brought in a little deeper perspective on kind of just how to deal with what I would consider to be a very disorganized and somewhat chaotic reality of our world, which terrifies me in many regards. And yet I realize is that being here in this kind of space, that like provides the bubble that says no matter what happens, you're always going to be able to have some level of peace within it and not allow yourself to get caught up in it. And one thing that you were saying about, you know, kind of love and hatred, I have a hard time with the word hatred because it denotes that there's supposedly this antithesis to what love is. And I have a really hard time believing that. But one thing, as either you or Joseph or Stephen or somebody out there was saying, it made me realize is that when I'm true to my own love, then that's all I can be, is my own love. But when I don't understand my love and I take on somebody else's definition of their love to be my own, then I'm using my creative energy through their pathway, which fundamentally doesn't work. And then when that gets reflected back onto me, from my standpoint, that's what creates the fear, the anger, and the hatred. Because it's like you're trying to run like a diesel engine on gasoline or a gasoline engine on diesel. It just doesn't work. It's going to break at some point. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like creating an energetic continuity that still affirms that love is the only thing, but it also requires the proper understanding and management of how that love is utilized. Does that kind of fit with your understanding?
Well, it's a little more complicated than my understanding. My understanding is really pretty simple. First of all, Yeshua says love has no opposites. There are no. I ask him, well, is fear the opposite of love? Is hate the opposite of love? He said, love has no opposites. Love is the ultimate state of union. It originates in God, the uniting force of the universe. And so what I have come to understand, by the way, the hatred is to be found all through the Bible. People have recognized it as an unwanted presence in the world, let's put it that way. But basically, in my observations of people, my communications with Yeshua, I find that it's just a psychosis. It's an illness of the soul, a disease of the soul. It has nothing to do, well, I guess indirectly, because if the soul is suffering from that illness, there's not much place for love. But it's not really an opposite, because you can displace hatred by imparting love. You know, you fill your cup with something else, with something different. But a soul that has not been nurtured with a connection to God is very likely to become hateful whenever life is hard or when they need to justify harmful activities to other people. Hatred is not the cause of their harmful activity. Their harmful activity probably just happens out of aggression, greed, expeditions for power, and so forth. But how they justify it is with hatred. So it's just a generative disease of the soul that is not the opposite of love, but it does exist. You know, we might want to say, well, there are no psychopaths. Well, you know, yeah, there are. There are, and they need treatment. They need care, and they need treatment. Well, it's psychopathy of the soul, and it does exist. And we need to learn how to overcome it, restore the virtue of the soul that has degenerated into that. And I think that this is going to be a pretty natural process as we begin to display more genuine love on this earth. So it's not the dark alternative to love. It has nothing to do with love or the degradation of love. It just, it's a different category. It's just a different state of being altogether.
Yeah, I think the way I kind of look at it and say that when there's clarity in what love is, you have love. When you have distortion of love, either misunderstanding or trauma, or you trying to take somebody else's truth over your own, then things get a little bit messy. And so I always kind of like look at it from the standpoint of what's the clarity and what's the essence of it, and not try to go to somebody else's interpretation of it.
That's
but,
right.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, you, when it comes to love, you are the one who says what it is for you.
Yep. Yeah.
But and even expressions of love can be authentic for many people. Sharing, charity, giving of the self in service as expressions of love can be quite authentic for many. And for some others, they're just for show. And Yeshua talked about that with regard to prayer. He taught the apostles to be authentic and reverent in their prayer, and not to be shouting their prayers to the public on the streets in order to brag about how righteous they were. So there are many different ways of saying what you're talking about, Ken, depending on the culture and the language that is embracing the idea. But in our current culture and language, I would completely agree with everything you're saying, except for that one little phrase where you posited hate as the opposite of love. It's not. It has nothing to do with love. It's a disease. That's it.
Yeah, and I think just to clarify, I wasn't saying that hate is the opposite of love. I was saying that hate, in many regards, is seen to be the opposite of love. But that's the number one thing that I have a really difficult time with, because, as I said, if one thing is all-encompassing, there is no opposite.
There is no opposite to love. That's right.
Yeah.
That is right.
Yeah.
But that's a very big realization, Ken, and not very many people have that scope of perception. So you have to be a little tolerant and just redirect their thoughts to say, well, maybe, you know, that person is just really suffering with a disease of the heart. You know,
well,
there are many types of heart disease, and the spiritual heart disease is the worst.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, I think one thing that, and this is too deep for today, but, you know, I would love to hear, you know, maybe a message where you talk about the essence of truth and the distortion of truth and how that relates to love and the distortion of love. Because truth and love, to me, are kind of like two sides of the same coin. And sometimes we see the world through one, or we see it through the other one, but in the end, in my world, they all have to reconcile. It all has to reconcile, because it's either truth or...
Yes, they do.
And yet, when we look at it, we say, there's truth and the distortion of truth, and there's love and the distortion of love. So we have these four different things. And how do we bring it back to just one that encompasses all of it? So maybe that would be a great topic for another time, but it's a biggie, no doubt.
I don't know that I'm up to that, Ken, but I'll give it a try sometime. Okay.
Yeah.
If Yeshua wants to instruct me or partner with me on a webinar inclined in that direction, my intuition is in total agreement with you that they're two sides of the same coin. But truth is more, it's what we have more interest in the playing out of reality, the playing out of life, moving through whatever reality we're in, isn't leading in the direction of truth. And then love is more in the direction of unconditional sharing of life. It's more toward unity, the playing out of what does unity look like at its highest level of attainment. And, of course, the very highest level of attainment is just simply being one with God. And then there are gradients moving down from that. But I think all levels of unity are levels of love, whether it's unity with God, your family, your life partner, your business partner, those you share philosophical opinions with. You have a unity, and in upholding that unity and building that unity, that is love.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, thank you.
That's the thing that brings it all back together. So just a quick blessing to everybody. My sister Cindy, her husband Steve, my housemates Cindy and Brian, and two very good friends of the family who just had their mother pass away, Brandon and Carolyn. So with that, I'll leave it. And thank you and bless you all. All right. Take care.
Well, many blessings to you, Ken. We love you here, and we're so glad you're with us.
Yep. Likewise.
See you next week. Thank you, Ken. We are clear on our board and getting ready for our blessing.
Well, let's just all of us settle down in our chair and stretch our legs a little bit, our arms a little bit, get comfortable, but also get a little bit moving, because we've been sitting here for a while, and we've been sitting here for a while, and you know, use a phrase I picked up from my old daddy, I get stove up. I don't really know what stove up means, but I think it means kind of rigid, kind of like the rigidness we form when we're really too tired to move, so we just don't move, and then we try to get up and we can't move. I think that's sort of what it meant, but it comes from a generation I don't fully understand. I just appreciate it. So we're going to just start, if you can, by standing, okay? And as you stand, what I just want you to do is I want you to move your torso to facing the right or the left. Doesn't matter which comes first. We're going to do them both, okay? Take it as twist as far as you can comfortably, and then switch to the other side as much as you can comfortably. Okay, now I want you to raise your right arm or left, which comes first for you, and reach like you're reaching to pick an apple from a tree. Just really, really have your sights on that apple. Grab it and pull it down. Okay, now on the left side, I want you to reach up for that other apple on the tree. Grab it and pull it down. Yeah, didn't that feel good in your shoulders? Okay, with that having been done, now bend your arms, lift your arms, and bend your forearms forward towards your chest so that you're creating little elbow wings. You know, your elbows are bent, hands on your chest or touching your chest somehow. So you've got little wings you could flap. I want you to bring those wings all the way up as far as you can towards your head. Okay, that you're stretching your ribs. Okay, that's going to feel really good. It's going to help you get a deeper breath. All right, and now you take your elbows forward as far as you can, and that's going to stretch your upper back. So if your upper back got in a slouching position while you were sitting, that's going to help it be loose and fluid. Having done that, now we're going to work on our legs. I want you to stretch it doesn't matter which leg, just take one and stretch it, extend it as far as you can without losing your balance. Hold onto the back of a chair or the sofa or shelf or whatever to make sure you keep a good balance. And it doesn't have to be a big extension, just a tiny one is fine. But move your toes forward towards your knee, because that's going to stretch your calf. And it'll get the veins running through the back of your knee flowing down into your foot, okay? And wiggle your foot just a little bit. Make a little windmill out of it. And now a larger windmill out of that leg. Okay, let's shift legs and bring the other leg up. Going to do the same thing with the other leg. You're going to bend your foot towards your knee, okay? Feel that nice stretch on the calf, okay? Ah, does it make you want to take a deep breath? See, it's opening your back. As you open your back, the constriction on your lungs releases. Okay, now make a little windmill out of that foot, okay? And now a windmill out of your leg. And it could be a tiny little windmill because we want you to keep your balance. This isn't calisthenics. It's not yoga. It's not anything other than normal human movement. Okay, and now let's take a really deep breath. I want you to take a breath through your nose so that it will go up into your sinuses. Okay, it'll clear your sinuses. Hold it for a couple of seconds. And then expel it with vigor through your mouth. Let it go. Cleanse your lungs. Now take another one through your nose. Take it up into your sinuses and now expand your lungs with a further dimension of that breath. So your whole upper body is filled with air, and hold it for a couple of seconds. Now expel it. Okay, good. Now you can sit back down or lie down, whatever's comfortable for you. I recommend you sit down for the blessing because your feet will be touching the ground and your feet should be bare because you're going to be pulling energy up from the earth. And in cold weather, when you just really don't want to be barefoot, wear socks or wear shoes that are made of only natural elements because you want to be conveying earth energy up through your body. And the same thing with your head. Have it uncovered, or if your spiritual practice requires that you have it covered when you pray, then only use natural elements. Silk, cotton, wool, linen, that sort of thing. Could be a wool cotton blend. That's okay. Blends are okay as long as there's no artificial substance in it. And I think bamboo is great. I love bamboo, and it's very much of the earth. Okay, so we're going to take our attention into a restful mode now, and the breath we're going to breathe is a restful breath. It's a four square breath, or we might call it a mindful breath, because you're going to think about this breath. Okay, you're going to inhale slowly and hold it. Pause for a second longer. Now exhale slowly. And pause as long as you can. And now inhale. Now as you inhale, think about the gift of life you're being given. And you pause in order to receive and assimilate that gift. So that when you give a breath, It's a pure and perfect gift. Not just stuff you're getting rid of. Good, and now you pause. Giving your gift to others and to nature a chance to be received. And again, let's receive. Take and be grateful. Use for love. Now exhale. Give with freeness of spirit. And pause while it's being received and accepted by all to which it was given. And let's keep going on this as I offer my prayer to Yeshua. To Yeshua, Son of God, beloved of the Holy Spirit, Redeemer of humanity, giver of love, of forgiveness, of right thinking and rightful ways, of life, the joys and the blessings of life. We thank you that you're with us every step of the way, in a universe of endless blessings. Help us to receive and to know how to receive, that what we take into ourselves shall be a blessing, shall make us stronger, more loving, wiser, more tolerant, more charitable, and more creative. We thank you for recognizing our gifts and also for taking us to places where we can learn more about how to receive and give and be part of our human family. For those who don't know, we pray for them too. We extend all of humanity and all of life into our prayer. We thank you that we were given the opportunity to be part of life and the living. Help us to give it our best, to do our best, to be our best. In the course of living and forevermore enjoying eternal life. We thank you for inviting us into eternal life and being at the gateway as we make our transition. We thank you for being at the gateway as we bring new life into this world. May we be worthy stewards of this new life. Respect it, cherish it, develop it, and honor it all the days of our life. We ask for blessings to those who have so few. We ask that they may know there are infinite blessings to be received so that their heart may be turned toward goodness and care and love. We ask now that you be with each and every person in this call, hearing their prayers, scanning their hearts, and bringing into ultimate manifestation all the desires of their heart and all the needs of their life. In your precious name, we ask now and always to be with you. Amen. Blessing givers, will you stand and join me? Amen, amen, and amen. Your blessing has been given. Now it's time for you to just go to bed and lay down on your bed or your sofa or a mat on the ground. Whatever pleases you, just be horizontal in a state of complete receiving and surrender. Look upwards toward the heavens. Feel the earth beneath you and receive from all directions. The blessings of God are with you, and they will unfold in the hours and days ahead. Bye-bye for now, and I look forward to being with you again next week.